A great battle is a terrible thing, the old knight said, but in the midst of blood and carnage, there is sometimes also beauty. Beauty that could break your heart. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners.
Seventh Kingdoms material, or is that like a gray area?
Yeah, that one's a little fuzzy. I'm not gonna lie, there's probably a chance that we get a cease and desist from the George R. R. Martin estate on that, but right. we'll see what happens. It's best to go ahead and do it and then ask forgiveness, right?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it, right? I mean, lawyers have to, you know, be employed to do something, right?
Yeah. You know, a couple of my good friends are lawyers. At least one of them plays this game. So I would like to help keep Dodd in a job.
Are you talking about Dodd Harris?
Yes.
Oh, I love that guy. That guy's awesome. He has the best handshake.
You just like him because he's also from your home state.
Right, but he also has the best handshake.
Hmm.
So early props to Dodd.
There we go. Props to Dodd. I didn't see this episode going that direction. That's interesting. It's always something brand new on the way.
I didn't expect you to mention Dodd.
Are we allowed to prop like Netrunner podcast hosts on the show? Like, come on.
I would say we would be able to if you put out an episode in the last 9 months or so.
Well, I hear the only game that's more dead than Netrunner is Game of Thrones, right? I mean, isn't just like everything so terrible right now, right? That's what I've heard on the intertubes.
Yeah, the only thing that Game of Thrones has going for it is really podcasts. Just a lot of podcasts. Instead of releasing new cards, FFG is just encouraging new podcasts.
I will say that Game of Thrones also has something else going for it, in that it is still a game, unlike Conquest.
Oh, sick burn. Sick burn. Take that, Games Workshop.
But only half of Game of Thrones is still a game, because Melee is still not a game.
Oh, now I'm sad.
Do you have to have
rules
to be a game?
No,
I love
Melee. It's a game that you can play, but you just don't win anything for it.
Whoa, we've got prizes. We've got a tournament coming up here in Springfield this weekend. The day after most listeners are going to be listening to this podcast on October 1st, we're going to have Knights of the Long Summer. We've got, actually just this week, I got messages that 7 more new players are coming to the event and awfully excited about it. So, I mean, we'll see what final turnout is, but I have high hopes for a reasonable kind of store championship size.
That awesome. Is a professional segue.
That is a professional segue. Except we haven't actually introduced ourselves.
I tried to say, hey, you know, this is the White Book, or this is, you know, Team Honor, and you guys just kept going. So I'm Will, as always, sometimes known as Kenan, if you're on any internet forums, or I am, but most folks aren't anymore, it seems. Topical.
I'm Aaron, and I don't know why I play this game anymore.
And if you can't tell from my nasally high-pitched voice, I'm Patrick Haynes, also known as Red Viper, a year that I was born,
87.
Maybe? 87? Which is definitely not the year I was born, because I'm still under a,
age. He quit using that. I thought he was just Patrick Haynes on the boards now.
You mean, I thought that you were just Patrick Haynes?
Who's right. Patrick Haynes?
You are Patrick Haynes.
Oh, I am Patrick Haynes. That's true.
Okay, but for real, for listeners that are not going to follow along with this joke, who are you, gentlemen?
I'm Roy Rogers, and apparently I'm on every podcast.
I'm Luke, and I used to edit the White Book.
Right, back when they had articles.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've still got those. It's just that Luke quit putting them up, so, you know.
Oh, wow. I'm actually writing one myself. Like, part of the problem was, like, it's weird, like, have you ever noticed that even though most people don't work on an academic calendar, like, their lives are still governed by it, even if they don't have kids? Like all of a sudden, like, the school year started, and all of our contributors just, like, stopped sending stuff.
I mean, that's probably true. Plenty of people definitely are busier in sort of September through, I mean, obviously this changes, but September through November, and then busy again, like, February through late spring, so May, June. And then, like, the summer and the you know, Judeo-Christian holiday season sort of are sort of gaps that which generally people's availability is pretty good.
Plus, in the U.S., you know, you spend 15-ish years getting used to that schedule in the, you know, formative stages of your life, and I think it just kind of sinks in.
Yeah, it was just an observation. I had to resort to a Facebook poll. Okay, so we're gonna have that cranked out here in the next day or two. It'll be up.
You
wouldn't have to do that if people used forums.
Players were barely literate. That's why they had to use this speaking cure of a format, podcasts, to communicate. Right.
Yes.
Since Aaron's not here, I have to say this. I wonder how much of this discussion is actually going to make it into the episode.
Really? Like, are we insulting too many people, or?
No, but we are really meandering. Like, we had the chance for this nice segue, and then we had to introduce ourselves, and then it just wandered way off track.
Yeah, but, like, I think that that's more fun. I mean, my bourbon-induced self says that that's the goal here.
I mean, the problem is, I don't think any listener ever tells me that's fun. Or maybe it's just people that hate the show to begin with that are like, nope, I hate the banter, go away. So,
All I'm saying is that drinking is fun, and that makes you not focused.
I think...
Too true.
I mean, it's one of those things where now that I'm coming on 2 years of being pretty intimately involved with the Thrones.
Intimately evolved.
Yeah, that would be pretty funny. There's two kinds of complainers, right? There's the game isn't serious enough scolds that come out whenever there's too much banter or too many podcasts or whatever. And then there's the, like, oh, the game should only be fun people who complain when all we're talking about is, like, reviewing cards or rules questions or people talking about strategies. And you can't make, depending on where the pendulum is at any moment, one group is louder than the other, and you can never sort of please everyone. So I think, you know, we should just make our content the way in which we enjoy it and let the haters hate.
Exactly. That's the only way to keep doing it, is just do it the way you enjoy it and let the chips fall.
And besides, all those analytic podcasts, Will produces an episode every week, and then, like, Beyond the Wall, as soon as Sean Emberley joins, stops making episodes. There's a causal relationship there.
Yeah, yeah, and banter's going down to bi-weekly too for a while. Whew, gosh. All right, guys. So we're going to go ahead and jump back to what we had attempted to segue into earlier, and that is a lovely bit of news out of FFG this week that a good chunk of the community probably missed. And that is store championships. I think, to my knowledge, Roy was the first to hop on to Facebook and kind of spread this news. So why don't you do us that favor here too? What did we hear about store championships?
Well, we're in the November track, right? So the weird thing that we have to get used to this year is that store championships are picking up right when Worlds will be going on. So, which is great for people who can't make it to Worlds, right? Because you'll have a nice tournament to go to. So we're on what FFG is calling the November track. So in a couple of months, you know, store championship season is starting up again. And so what they announced or unannounced or barely announced or sent into the tubes was the locations for all of the North America and Canada store championships, which is really great. If you're looking for information like when and what time, you're going to actually have to get in contact with the store, or oftentimes actually it's better to just get in touch with the meta, because oftentimes it's going to be meta leaders that are going to be organizing these store championships. You know, some stores take the initiative, others don't. So if you're interested in a sort of a store if you know, are just getting into the game over the summer and didn't get to attend a store championship last year, they're really fun. They're the entry-level competitive event in Thrones or any FFG game where, you know, it's serious. You should know the rules. You should be prepared with a deck that you think can go pretty far in a tournament. But it's definitely much more of a casual experience than certainly Gen Con or even a regional. So if you want to get your feet wet, with sort of taking Thrones seriously as a competitive game, a store championship is a great place to go. It's a great place to meet people. It's a great place to sort of begin to sort of extend your experience beyond just sort of maybe your group of friends or playing on Octagon or something like that. Just on Octagon.
Where would you go on the FFG website to try to find that information, Will?
You're a funny man. You're a funny man. Because listeners, you won't. You won't find it.
You can read it off. You can go to https://www.fantasyflightgames.com.
It's a regular colon. It's not a semicolon.
I don't care. /events/2006-store-championships-november-track/a-game-of-thrones.
Okay.
That's where you go.
That was impressive. I was just going to direct people to our Facebook page and click the link to get to it from there. Because, dear listeners, if you try to find it from the FFG website, particularly maybe from the organized play section of the website or something, you will find a list of store championship locations. You will find a list of store championship locations from 2016. I would, however, caution you to double check the month of that posting because it is from the beginning of the year and is not accurate.
Absolutely, because in general, I would say the number of store championships has expanded, which is really great in 2016. I don't know what that's the case in the Midwest, but in the Northeast, like in New York alone, we have, without leaving the New York City subway system, you can go to 5 store championships, which is such a huge
improvement
from last year.
It's absolutely expanded here in the Midwest. I mean, Indiana alone is hosting 5 or 6.
Looking at here, one.
Ohio is hosting quite a few. Ohio store, by the way, as much as I dogged the Midwest meta a couple of weeks back, the Ohio store championships that I went to, awesome. Like 20 plus players every time. If you can get there, you should. It's amazing. Really fun time.
Nice. Missouri's not doing so hot. Just 2 here, 3 in Iowa. What do we have in Oklahoma? Hey, Oklahoma has branched out a little bit more. Looks like there's 4 there now, so that seems like an improvement.
That's great.
Maybe the Midwest is boosted.
I was really pumped to see Kentucky had quite a few. I was really pumped to see that.
So,
like at least 4 or 5.
Nice. So this is kind of a side thought. I don't necessarily want to head down the huge rabbit hole and retread old ground that this could do. But I do find it interesting how, you know what, I'm just going to say it, poorly this was communicated.
Wait. I feel like this has been said before.
Probably. But I have more coming with that. I'm going to loop this back to a very old topic, which is, why did FFG buy Card Game DB? I've still not seen a clear path forward there, and I'm sitting here percolating that as I'm actually I was out on my run today, and I was like, man, you know, if only they had an FFG.
That's not the only thing he was percolating.
Hey yo, FFG had a website that was maybe devoted to these card games and maybe the minis games that have organized play and, you know, had forums and deck builders and such. And, you know, maybe they could add functionality to it and have an event listing and such. And, you know, just have this whole organized play site. So then I immediately thought to myself, I'm going to go buy the domain name ffgop.com so that if FFG ever listens to this episode and wants to do this, they have to buy the domain from me. And I have bad news for the listeners. The White Book will not be making buku dollars off of said purchase because someone already has it. I don't know who.
Have you tried .co and .org and all the other ones?
Yeah, .org is taken. I could nab ffgop.net or potentially .info, which I thought was a fairly decent one. So, you know, there's some options. Yes, let us cyber on. So we've got another brief thing that I wanted to hit on before the main topic for the episode, and that is our Patreon. We did go ahead and launch it. Listeners probably heard about it last week. I would sure hope that they heard about it anyway. And I think we had a decent start to that. We've got 7 patrons up to $30 a month, which is getting close to that point I wanted to hit as the default of just covering all the hosting and such, so I can attention to some other stuff. But I'd love to get over that and continue to dream up special prizes and whatnot. But speaking of prizes, I had a little something that I wanted to throw out here that was not listed as a reward, but a nice little thank you to our early adopters on air. I want to give a big shout out to Uncle's Games over on the West Coast. You guys will hear more with Patrick from Uncle's Games a little later next month. Shout out to Tom Collins for helping out. Shout out to Chris Schoenthal, James Huff. Michael, and I'm probably going to butcher his last name. I don't think I've ever heard it out loud. Lamachek?
Mike's a great guy.
It could be anything.
One of my favorite people involved in Thrones. Mike's great.
Yeah. By all means, let me know how that I can not butcher your name in the future. Special thanks as well to Adrian Snow and Tobias Ritza. I'm probably butchering that last name as well. I apologize. By all means, contact me so that I can correct that as well. So, huge thanks to those guys. If you'd like to support us, help get us up there where we can make sure all the mics are where they need to be, and pour some extra money into coming up with some neat prizes and products, check us out at patreon.com/white_book_podcast.
We should, like, think about other prizes.
Well, here's one that I'll say. I promise that if you support the White Book Patreon for at least 6 months at any level in the Props and Slops, you will get an on-air special just to you thank you from a drunk version of one of the podcast hosts, including Aaron. All right?
So wow. Any
drunk including podcast but not host limited of your choice.
Yes, including but not limited to Aaron. You will get a special on-air thank you addressed just to you if you support the White Book Patreon for 6 months. You can pick any of us.
We'll get drunk
for that episode and prop and slop you, or prop you, rather.
Will, can I add another one?
Sure.
Okay, so anybody who was at Gen Con this year and then went to Casablanca afterwards knows that I like to buy people drinks when I'm drunk. So... yeah, Roy, I know. So I will buy you a bourbon of your choice if you support the White Book Podcast at any level for 6 months at the next time we meet up.
That's awesome. Also, though, I do want to point out, Luke, you realize they could just support for $1 for 6 months and have contributed roughly the exact price of a drink of that bourbon. You should probably also specify a drink, not a bottle.
To be fair, I also don't buy crappy well bourbons, so there's that.
What if they really like well bourbon, though? There are some people that, you know, they love
well,
that.
Well, then they can have a cocktail of their choice.
Okay. There you go. Turn it into an old-fashioned or something.
If you're so inclined.
All right, that came to a very awkward end. Let's move on.
I was trying to be nice and offer people alcohol and stuff.
I actually think that, personally, I think that the drunk thank you from some White Book host is really good. I would do that. After I start my new job, I just may do that and pick Patrick or something. And
I feel like it should be, I feel like it should also be a minimum length, right? I feel like you should have to thank them for at least 20 seconds, 30 seconds.
Oh yeah. It'll be I'd say a minute. It would be a minute. Thank you.
It's like an Academy Award acceptance speech.
And then I just have to start the music and play people off.
I mean, this sounds like a fun segment for people who contribute money. You get this, minute of air on the show from a host that, you know, whose content you like. I think it'd be fun. I mean, I'm just stealing it from podcasts that I back on Patreon that give you a thank you of your choice, you know.
That's brilliant. Okay, so last week, Tommy and I talked a little bit about some upcoming community-run events that we're involved in, and we'd like to kind of continue that trend here with events that hosts have going on. And so I know Roy has a fairly big one coming up in New York, so why don't you lay it on us?
So this year, New York has the honor of hosting Thronestoberfest, which is a rotating tournament. This is the fourth annual one between sort of the three big cities in the northeast of the United States, which is Washington, D.C., New York City, and Boston. Last year was in Boston. The year before that, it was in Washington. First year was in New York. So boom. So it's come back to us. Since it's in October and it's called Thronestoberfest, it's Oktoberfest themed. So we're going to – the winner and second place are going to have drinking-themed prizes. I haven't quite finalized exactly what they are, but they're going to be, drinking-themed, Oktoberfest-themed prizes. Plus, we'll be doing a raffle and all of that good stuff. And this is sort of a lead-in for us for our big annual tournament that's been running. It's the besides the World Championship, it's the longest-running Game of Thrones event, which is Red Saturday, which is the weekend after Thanksgiving. But Thronestemberfest is in October. It's actually in October 22nd, I believe. Yes, Saturday, October 22nd. And feel free to get in touch with me either on Facebook or CardGameDB, which I occasionally check. And I can give you more details, or you can join the New York City Facebook group, or look at the thread that we have on CardGameDB about it. So if you are interested in, if you're in the northern part of North America, please come out. It will be a great time. This will be the first tournament that Dave Stroms will be playing at for a year, because he has to defend his title. And if I say it on the podcast, it must be true. Aaron will be there, and it's also the last tournament that I will be organizing as a resident of New York City, because I'm moving to Philadelphia. So it's going to be a really sort of big, fun event. We're going to do a big party afterwards. So just please come on out, try to win one of our awesome prizes, and have a really good time with probably, to my personal experience, the best Thrones community in North America. But, you know, a good time either way.
Can you tell us, like, one prize?
Okay, I can tell us one prize. The winner's going to get a big beer stein. And I won't say what we'll say on the beer stein or what the logo will be or any of that stuff, but you're going to get a big beer stein if you win.
Will there be alt art cards?
The problem that Thronestoberfest has, to get a little in the logistical weeds, is it's a month before our big Red Saturday tournament. So it will not have alt art cards. Red Saturday will, and I'm not able to announce anything specifically about prize support for Red Saturday yet, but every year for Red Saturday we have alt art cards for everybody who attends. And if you know, like the New York City marches that have been running around were last year's card, and so we aren't able to have alt arts for Thronestemberfest, but there will be alt arts at Red Saturday a month later.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, Red Saturday is just a fantastic tournament as well. Like, I mean, New York City tournaments, if anybody was able to make the dance last year, was, or not last year, it's still this year. This, it feels like a year ago, but back in the spring, that was a really amazing tournament. It was won by, you know, it was such a fun tournament that even kids could win at it. That just shows you how open it was, that a minor could take the title. Things like that. Like, it was just a really fun tournament.
So, question for the listeners, because we were just talking earlier about how store championship track has shifted. They may be wondering, then, is Red Saturday going to be a store championship, or is that going to be standalone?
That's something that we are considering, since the Complete Strategist did get a store championship. It really sort of just depends on what the other organizers want to do. I mean, Red Saturday, there's about four of us that organize it. So it'll be sort of a discussion. So I'm not really in a position yet to announce anything about Red Saturday, but Thronestoberfest, we're going to be having the beer stein for the winner and another sort of drinking thing prize for the runner up. And we'll, you know, be having a raffle and all that kind of good stuff. Cause I have a bunch of, you know, Thrones related, swag that I've acquired and things like that. So So Red Saturday, when Dan and Dave and George and I finalize that prize support, I'll come on this show, and every time I'm on it, just hammer home how great it's going to be.
So you're saying that Thronestoberfest is not a kid-friendly event?
That I would say definitely, because it's so drinking themed.
That's fair. I'm gonna like both sort of prop up and sort of throw shade at the Windy City Cup. People should go because it's going to be a ton of fun. And this year will probably be my first year at attending. So I'm excited to see Tommy again and a bunch of other people. But I'm going to throw shade because the Indie Meta is also doing their own alt art card that is similar to a title that they are doing, which is the Crown of Gold. And you can go check out that art on the actual event page on Facebook. But I'm just saying, ours is pretty freaking great.
Their Valor is really fantastically well designed. So though.
Our valor?
Yeah, your valor. Your valor, yeah. Like, so your last All Dark card was really well done, so this one I'm sure will be also quite fantastic.
Yeah, and Will actually also has a picture of the Kings of Summer and Kings of Winter agendas we did.
Ooh, those were slick.
Just saying, the indie meta does good All Dark cards.
Well, I don't think there's any better time than that to go ahead and kick it over to the main topic for the episode, because it's, I think, fairly tournament related. Gearing up again here as we turn toward more events in the fall. And so Luke had kind of hammered out some ideas on a topic he wanted us to hit on this week. So why don't you fill us in on that one?
Okay, so I was toying around with a few ideas. Jeremy, I know that you messaged me with a topic. I'm still trying to figure out how we're going to do it. But what we decided to go with this week was sort of, in my opinion, an end of the competitive season primer that sort of breaks down the top decks in the meta right now, both in Europe and North America, the things that we see winning a lot of tournaments and making cuts, and then talk about what that deck does well, what situations that deck doesn't perform well in, and, you know, maybe pick out a few individual cards from those decks as we talk that, you know, you have to be prepared for and maybe even tech for, and then maybe talk about some sneaky decks that are making their way into the meta at large. Does that sound about right?
Sounds like it to me. I think that's what we're hitting on. So we spent a little time earlier today kicking back and forth what some of those decks and things were. And so I think we've got some stuff to kick it through. I think the last kind of big chunk of that was some good thoughts that Roy set out here for us. So tell you what do you say, Roy? Why don't you pick out the first one that you think we ought to hit on?
Well, I think the first one is sort of the obvious one, right? Which is Lannister good stuff. You know, it's sort of Lannister. If you want to build a Lannister deck, you basically can just, you know, get the color chart or color pie and just twirl it and land on whatever it is and build
spin the wheel.
And build a really good, solid deck. But, like, the most common ones are things like Lanny Wolf, Lanny Kraken, and obviously Chris Schoenthal's Gen Con winning deck, Lanny Dragon. But, you know, or well, you know, like, Jakob did really well at Valberg with Lanny Winter. You know, Lanny Crossing is still around and can do well. Like, just Lannister good, efficient stuff, I think, is sort of, no matter whether you're in the European community or the North American community or the worldwide community, like, if you're going to a tournament, you're thinking about what the meta is, Lannister good stuff is the first deck you have to keep in mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's either Lanny Banner or Lanny Mono, and it doesn't really matter what the agenda is there, right? I mean, the card quality that you can shove in to a Lannister deck is kind of ridiculous. Either it's the Mono faction jumper deck, or the mono faction sort of control deck where you can run a bunch of draw and a little bit of choke, or it's the banner deck where you just, you know, cram in the 12 to 13 cards of whatever your banner faction is, or if you want
to 12 to 13, so specific right there.
Or if you want to win a Missouri regional 11 of your banner faction.
Ooh, whoa. No, that's if you want to get disqualified from a Missouri regional.
Okay, I should revise. If you want to make the top 8 at a Missouri regional, then you should run 11 banner cards. But yeah, that deck is super reliable. pretty consistent in terms of like setups and draw. So what do those decks do well? Like, let's just take a generic example that's been winning a bunch of tournaments lately. Let's take Lanny Dragon. Like, what does that deck do well?
Kill shit. That's, I mean, I think that's one of those things that unifies all Lannister decks, but I think the reason why Lanny Dragon is sort of percolated to the top is that it's just really good at killing shit through, I mean, Lannister, I think, is the only faction, I guess Martell a little bit, but I think Lannister is the only one that can run both removal events at 2 to 3 each, and, you know, plus Gregor, plus Miri. It's just an exhausting amount of removal that can just put that kind of pressure on your opponent where, look, if you don't get the jump on me, I'm just going to kill all of your good stuff. All of your answer cards, Varys, Fast Eddie, you know, unless you have very clear answers to my cards in the form of Milk of the Poppy or Nightmares, you're going to die. And you need to get those answers ASAP, because if I get ahead of you, I can, you know, protect Tywin, I can protect Miri. You're not going to be able to get military challenges through because of Gregor. So it's just, you know, a deck that is just capable of shutting down what its opponent wants to do very quickly and very frustratingly sometimes.
Yeah, I think I just want to second what Roy is saying about the targeted removal, and I really want to emphasize the repeated targeted removal. They've got stuff there with Miri in that combination, and while Gregor is not, you know, an auto win sort of or a guaranteed kind of targeted removal, I should say, when you do trigger him, he tends to be kind of a blowout. And I think that's in part because they're so repeatable, but also because each time they hit, not only are they taking out the good key stuff, but it allows Lannister to really make that economic advantage that much bigger and more overwhelming. You know, they're already getting that Tywin and Tyrion gold, and then that's already bad enough to kind of be up against. But then now when they manage to come through and consistently take out, you know, 5 or 6 cost characters or whatever, now it's not a, you know, 2 to 6 gold difference on a turn. Now you've got to add in the invested 6 gold from the character that just died. And that kind of snowballs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of the things that has always frustrated me about playing Lannister as a pilot is that I feel like I get into that situation a lot where my card quality has just overrun my opponent so early that I feel like I just have a lock on the game, and if I don't make a huge mistake, then I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. I think Lannister, and both Lannister Dragon in particular, because it's running 2 really impactful, or 2.5, because, I mean, Gregor is a really great 7 drop, but he's not going to win the game on his own, really, for you. But, like, Tywin and Miri, if you can get them out on setup, if you can do that Tywin, Chud, Rose Road setup, like, you can win the game on setup. I think it's, and reliably do so. And I think it's the only faction/deck that can do that consistently. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration for Lannister comes from. It sort of highlights some of the weaker points of where the game is right now. Because I actually do in general, you know, I might make jokes and, you know, I'm on another podcast, Second Sons, which like lives off negativity. But I think in general, the game is in actually a pretty solid place. But I think there are some weaknesses to the way in which the card quality works out. And Lanny Dragon puts pressure on those soft spots. And by this ability to, if you can have that nuts setup, you can just win the game, no matter whether how good your opponent's setup was in most cases, unless you're in a nightmare of a mirror match.
I agree. I think that's probably a good place to transition to what happens to Lanny Dragon when it doesn't perform, right? Because I think that setup is interesting in that, yeah, there are a lot of times where it will set up just fine, and because you're running good Lannister cards and a couple cheap Targ characters plus Miri, you're gonna get a decent setup. But I also find that Lanny Dragon and Lanny Banner, whatever, does tend to run a min-max curve, where it's really heavily loaded at the back end of the 6s and 7s, maybe even the 5s, and relatively light on the 1s, even if you're running all of the reducers, and you're running generally a decent number of events, and you're only running econ locations, and you're running very few of any attachments. So your setups can sometimes, if you mulligan a three-card setup that is kind of meh away, you can draw back into something that's not great. And I know that every deck can do that, but I find those decks, the Lanny Banner decks in particular, can really suffer from that.
Absolutely. I feel like the other major weakness is power icons, which I think, like, the Banner can sometimes make up for this, right? Where Kraken and Wolf Banner, you get an influx of really good power icons. But I think in Lanny Dragon in particular, its big weakness is it doesn't have really good power icons, and the power icons, besides Tywin, that you have, you don't want to be actually claiming power with. I mean, Miri is the greatest example of this, right? You don't want to win a power challenge to claim power with Miri. You want to win a power challenge to kill somebody with Miri, which can really slow your game plan down, or slow you down getting to the victory condition. And, you know, like, Tyrion is also a character. Like, his stealth on a power icon is pretty sweet, but at the same time, like, you often want that, you know, stealth on the intrigue, particularly against factions like Martell, to sort of push that tiers and do that kind of thing. So, like, you and Jaime, another one, a great character, or the Mountain, they don't have power icons. Jorah, he doesn't have a power icon. Like, there's just this, like, dearth of power icons. So for factions like Stark or Baratheon, that can sort of have a really great spread of power icons, or Greyjoy, if you can leverage that advantage, you can, even if your good characters are dying, if you can keep a board presence, you can sort of, not even necessarily outrush, but outgrind a Lanny Dragon deck if you can get ahead. And that's sort of the other problem that Lanny Dragon faces, which it can be outrushed, right? It has three sources of renown with Jaime, I guess. Did Lannister get renown in one of the chapter packs? And my brain is
Yeah, didn't they get some 4-drop power grab that we were just talking about when we did the review?
No, Amory Lorch is coming out next pack.
Yeah, Emery Lorch, right, will help, because Janos, or Janos, he has Intimidate. He's very useful, actually, but and he also doesn't have a power icon. So Lannister can get outrushed, which is definitely a problem that they face, and that's a real way to beat them. And then finally, and I'm just sucking up air, like, Milk of the Poppy and Nightmares can just swing the game against Lannister Dragon, like a well-timed Nightmare. Craven is another one. Like, Miri sitting with a Craven on her, you've wasted 7
points. Yeah.
Like, what's the fuck is the point of it? Even, and Tywin also with a Craven on him is also pretty bad, because, like, you want to be attacking with Tywin. I mean, he's still, yes, 1 to 2 challenges if he has a seal. If your version of Lanny Dragon is running seal, you know, he can defend 2 challenges. But still not being able to push that power grab with Tywin, because he's your best power icon in your deck. That the only other power icon that can really beat him in a challenge usually is Bob, right? By himself. And so if you can have those attachments, like Martell can sometimes be a nightmare if you take the right icon at the right time, like sort of being able to spot control their characters, particularly through blanking or attachments like Kraven or icon stripping attachments, can really muck up what Lanny Dragon's game plan is.
I also think that the Stark denial is huge, right? I mean, the denial package of just Cat and Winterfell is incredible, to be able to deny the Miri trigger, the Put of the Sword, the Tears, whatever it is that you want to deny. Also, Stark has an insane cost-to-strength ratio. So it's it's a really good counter. I think that if you're expecting a lot of Lady Dragon, Stark Fealty's not a bad shot.
I definitely agree, but I do think sometimes Stark is a really great matchup. I agree, and that's actually when I was talking with Aaron a little bit about this. He was definitely said that you should tell them that Stark Fealty is the answer. But I can just say my own experience. Stark Fealty against Lady Dragon and Lannister more generally can sometimes be overrun if they can Lady Dragon can get that swing turn on Stark. That just completely causes Stark Fealty to collapse. Like, if something bad happens to Catelyn on that, like, one turn, and they tears your fast Eddie, or they tears Catelyn, Lanny Dragon can't tears Catelyn because they don't have intrigue stripping, but my point is, you know, they'll put to the sword Catelyn, right, because they, you know, did something, and, like, then your just whole game plan collapses because they can just overwhelm you with all their removal. So I actually would think Baera, in some ways, is a better answer to Lannister because it can leverage that. I mean, Lady Dragon still has that stand, but I actually think that that Baera is a really, really good answer right now to Lannister and even Lady Dragon.
Yeah, I mean, and if it's any of the other good House Banners that good stuff banners that you were talking about, then Baratheon just has that much of an easier time. They're getting some new tools that I'm not sure necessarily hit the Lanny portion that much, like the Priestess next pack that we had talked about some. But even just that spot temporary removal, you know, it's not as good as a Kraven. But I feel like the Baratheon decks kind of build in a more consistency of that Neil than the Lanny decks necessarily have of stand. And so if they take your Miri or your Tywin or what have you out on a key turn, I think that can be a pretty big swing.
Right, because, I mean, Baera punishes you in many ways for playing expensive characters. I mean, that's what Spot Neil does. If a player sees their Neil at the right time, not even necessarily at the right time, but can just consistently see Neil. And one of the nice things about the Priestess, right, is it lets you run three more R'hllor cards for Melisandre. So I think maybe Baera, I mean, this is something we're going to have to obviously play test for Name of the Worlds, but I think Baera could, and I actually seen this a little bit in the recent European tournaments, that Baera is definitely a very solid answer to Lannister, even the Lanny Dragon version with Runny Illyrio.
Well, and not only more R'hllors for Melisandre, but the ability to more consistently play Scene in the Flames and that hand knowledge and removal of the Tears or Hound or something like that that the Lanny player is setting on in their hand can be a pretty big swing too.
I think it's funny that you mentioned hand destruction. So, I've been running my own version of Wama's Sun Garden. It's actually funny, we built those decks in isolation, and we just so happened to be Facebook chatting about Tyrell's Sun. And I think that if you are able to really clear their hand and know that there's not a whole lot of options, and you're able to control the icons of Miri, then, I mean, I think that you can really clear the board with the Varus, or, you know, regulate the board size with a Wildfire or something like that. I know that Lanny Dragon doesn't really care about hand size, but at the same time, if you know that there's no way that they can put you to the sword and you have some semblance of claim soak, there's something there. Like, if you can clear their hand, I think you've got a decent shot.
Okay. So for other decks that we wanted to hit on, I think I'm going to go ahead and jump in to kick things off with the next one, because a little bit ago, I think we touched on it enough that I almost thought we were going to transition just straight smoothly into that. And the next one, the one that I would pick out, is probably Stark Fealty. It's seen kind of take off, I feel like, on this side of the Atlantic. After hearing about it some elsewhere, it looks like it's had some some good showings recently in Canadian and French nationals, and just seems to be a strong answer deck to harken back to what we were talking about there earlier. Stark has this interesting dichotomy that has played together a lot better than I would have guessed to begin with, where they have these kind of reactionary answers that shuts down what the opponent wants to do in Caitlyn and Winterfell, combined with some pretty astounding speed capabilities, like with Fast Eddie, the Eddard from the Wolves box, that allow them to just spring to victory at a kind of astounding speed while keeping the opponent, you know, off their feet from being able to interact or say use some spot removal or something like that to be able to take it down. And I'm going to go ahead and throw out here that Luke, of course, is catching me on some other stuff here about Stark, in that it won some other tournaments, of course, American Nationals back at Origins, and some Australian regionals. So, I mean, it has, I think, a pretty proven tournament track record.
Roy, you play Stark. Do you want to go, or do you want me to go?
You can go ahead. I have many Stark feelings, so go ahead.
Okay.
And they're more feelings than reasoned opinions, so.
Sure. Okay. In my opinion, like, the thing that Stark does so well is that it, not only the denial, but, like, the sheer wall of strength that you have to get over is incredible. It just dumps out body after body after body, and then that's on the high end of the curve. But on the low end of the curve, they have built-in cancel and cheap stealth with ready-made saves and insane cost-effective intrigue icons. Like, Stark just has an amazing character base for relatively cheap, or at the most, you know, maybe 6 cost. It's just a powerhouse. It's so hard to get over. Ice is one of the best target removals in the game. Winter is Coming is an incredibly impactful event that can swing a game, either by military or power challenge, which is coincidentally the only two challenges that Stark really cares about. Stark just keeps getting good stuff too, like things that you can just throw in to a deck and be totally fine if you draw it, and if you don't, then it's not a big deal because I have another 5 strength, 6 strength power military icon coming out.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Ice and reminded me of it, because I meant to mention it earlier, because it's so interesting as a removal card, because it's not really quite repeatable in the sense of something like Miri that we were talking about earlier, but it's in this weirdly flexible spot where you can slap it on a character even if you just need it for the strength boost or something, and due to the changes in attachment rules, if that character dies, then it just goes back to hand. So it's in this kind of quasi middle ground with being repeatable, I think, and just winds up being a huge threat.
Right. I think Stark is also probably the only faction that can both rush and grind, which I think gives them a huge advantage, right? Because the fact that they have so much native renown and so many excellent power icons, it gives them a lot of flexibility, where if they get the jump on you, they can just win the game in two plots. But if you get into the point where you both have boards and you're just like trying to grind the game out, except maybe against Night's Watch Fealty or Night's Watch Winter or whatever, Stark
Tyrell.
Has an advantage to it. Tyrell. Well, Tyrell. Post-Renly, I think that might be the case. But right now, like...
Absolutely.
I think right now, Fast Eddie is better than Randall. If you're really trying to grind the game out. And James is welcome to disagree with me, and I would love to talk to him about it. But that would just be my opinion, particularly because he combos with so many other strong Stark cards, like the Blackfish. You know, if you can get the Blackfish going with Sandy Rand, you just win, and things like that. So I think Stark's ability to do both of those things puts him above. And I think they're the other faction that also, because of their box, brings the problems of card quality up, right? Lanny Dragon, I think, made that point as well, but also Stark, right? Stark has just a lot of efficient cards, and in many ways, it may or may not be good that they all get sort of work only really well in Stark Fealty, but you just sort of have a lot of really efficient cards. You have a lot of just power at all the cost slots, which in many ways makes them in some way stronger than Lannister, because Lannister, as Luke noted, you know, is very bifurcated.
They also have one of the best in-faction plots in the game.
Yes, and that's the biggest, to be completely honest, like the biggest strength that they have is the ability to put ice on Caitlyn and then either put Lady on her, and I mean, this is what happened to me at Gen Con. I got, you know, like out-grinded by this, and then you either use the Dire Wolf, the Naval Dogs character, to swing her into a military challenge.
The Kennel Master.
The Kennel Master, right? Swing her into a military challenge that you can't treachery or do whatever you want. And this, you know, at least Catelyn, a 6-strength Catelyn plus whatever you throw in, or 7 if you have Winterfell, you know, to kill people. Or, you know, to use the plot to swing Catelyn into a military challenge and do that. And, you know, Catelyn locks down. So the ability to combine lockdown with removal is really, really strong and can create this.
And event cancel.
And event cancel in the form of Bran. So it just... Stark is quite good. It is a good answer to Lannister in most cases, although and this, of course, may just be a play skill thing on my part. I'm a little more skeptical of the answer of Stark. You know, I think Lannister sort of keeps Stark... They keep each other honest, I guess, would be the point to me, versus, like, Stark being a clear answer to Lannister, but other players strongly disagree with me. Aaron believes that Stark Fealty is a really good answer to Lannister, good stuff. So, well, except for the winter version, the Lanny, the Yakub deck, the Lanny Kings of Winter.
I'm going to throw a shout out to Will here. Like, Stark is also just an insanely good melee house. Like, it is just so ridiculous how fast Stark can be in melee.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely... I think Stark and Tyrell are the two strongest melee factions right now. And I think Stark has a one-up on Tyrell, even though Dark Knowledge did take away the Gen Con running Tyrell. But he faced, I think, 2 Stark decks in the final? Patrick plus, I think, one of the other people. Because Greg was not running Stark, so I think the other person was
running... No, he was running Targros.
Yeah, he was running Targros. John was running Lords of the Crossing Tyrell.
Yep.
Patrick. No.
Stark Banner Rose.
Who was the other? It was...
That was 4, right there. Patrick Stark Banner Rose. And then the guy from Boston.
Oh, right. He was running Targ.
Targ Rose. And then John was running Tyrell Crossing.
For some reason, yeah. I thought there were 2 Stark decks in the final. But, it was just Patrick's last table was like 3 Stark decks. And... So Targ, but anyway, yes, but it's more flexible. My point.
So what beats Stark?
Night's Watch Fealty beats Stark. Even like a kind of crappy Night's Watch Fealty deck can beat Stark because of it's just can be really hard for Stark. Like Stark can grind games out, but Night's Watch can outgrind you if they're running the wall. The choke deck can, like, a turn that you fuck up Stark's economy curve can really, really hurt. Like, if they were planning to be able to drop Eddard plus Cat plus a Chud, but they can't. They can only play one of those characters. You can just switch the momentum of the game. So, like, Night's Watch Lion or Night's Watch Kings of Winter that's chokey can definitely, like, I think actually Night's Watch is a really good answer to Stark.
I think almost any deck running Wildfire is a good answer to Stark. Stark gets massive boards because it's really hard to force through kill events. And so if you're running Wildfire as your reset, like, that's a hell of an answer to Stark. I also think that Varus is a really good answer to Stark. Like, if they don't see an ice, like, goodbye all of those cheap little guys that they don't have dupes on.
I've got a second Roy there on anything that kind of throws off their econ game. I mean, they've got all these characters that they really like to see at kind of the higher parts of the cost curve. But then when you throw on top of that big cards like Ice at 3 and some of their locations at 4 that they kind of like, that can be a lot to try and juggle. And even just getting knocked off 1 or 2 gold can really, really mess that up.
So then what do you say about the sort of reincarnation of Stark HOD Winterfell, or Gates of Winterfell? The one that runs double marching orders, trading with the Ventoshi, just all the econ plots, and just, like, dumps out dudes. Doesn't even run attachments or events.
Yeah, I was just looking at that list for a little bit. I have to admit that I'm pretty curious. Obviously, it had a pretty good showing. But I guess maybe it just trips my attention a little bit less since it's not that kind of fun combo-y thing. It's just having a lot of money and playing dudes.
I mean, I'll be completely honest, I don't think that deck can survive Sam's Night's Watch Lion deck or people who have reverse engineered it, right? Like, I don't think that deck can survive Naval Superiority into Famine or Famine into Naval Superiority.
That's probably fair. And then, like, maybe a meager or a white tree on top of that, yeah.
Yeah, like, because if you naval a marching orders, like, that's, like, just the tears that you are going to be shedding when you look at, okay, I can't play events or locations, and I have 1 to 2 gold if I have, you know, some economy locations. Like, it's just real bad. Like, I think in many ways, I actually think choke decks right now are designed to prey on Stark. Because if you can disrupt that economy, even the age, and I'd love to hear from the Brits about this, but if you can disrupt that economy early with naval is like a very strong silver bullet against Stark, both in melee, I think, and in Joust. And so if you can just disrupt it, I mean, again, Stark's gained some good economy tools. They got a good one in the first chapter pack, and Bear Island is really solid, that don't rely on your plots.
Bear Island is insane.
But still, that can really get disrupted because Stark, I think, does rely on the power characters in the 6 slot to close games and maintain tempo for itself. And if you can screw that up and maintain an advantage with 2 claim plots, it's really, really difficult for them to come back from.
Okay, I'm going to make a weird assertion, and I think that Vera actually isn't the worst matchup for Stark. And I know that a lot of people will just say, well, Rob's just going to stand your board. And, like, sure, but if you can't set up the sacrifice engine...
And maybe John.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If you can't set up the sacrifice engine to be able to trigger Rob consistently, or if the sacrifice engine can be controlled, I think that Bera actually fares pretty well against Stark. Not necessarily, like, an overwhelming win percentage, but it can match them pound for pound on power icons. And if they can kneel out the big military dudes, it's got a shot, especially with the dominance tech.
Yeah, with the dominance tech, and also if you're running, like, Milk or Nightmares, like, Stark, because Bera, the classic Stark-Bera matchup, which I actually feel like in many ways, because I most played Stark actually pre the box, I feel like it was a very swingy matchup where if Stark saw Rob early, you could win the game pretty convincingly. But if Bera could get to the point where they didn't need to do military challenges anymore to get power, they could just only really do the power challenge, stand Robert, and then just sit and be like, come at me. And you're not going to... I'm not going to kill any of your characters. You know, you're going to have to find a way to kill your characters. John gives you an opportunity to sacrifice them, but if you can Nightmares John or Milk John, or, you know, if you can control, as you were saying, Luke, that stand engine... Bera can just run over Stark. And actually,
Since a lot of Baradex are running Wildfire.
Yeah, like if you know, I mean,
they like it.
The you know, it's difficult for Stark to you know post Wildfire. Like the question, the ultimate question you would have is like, it would really depend on like what the power totals are, like and how much power is on Robb Eddard, right? And if it's like Robb Eddard, Jon versus like Selmy, Melisandre, Robert, it would really depend on where the power is sitting on those characters there, because those are three, those are two really awesome boards that in some ways counter each other. So I feel like if you tech your deck right and you practice it, Barra can come up with a plus matchup. Not a great matchup, but a plus matchup against Stark.
I'm seeing a theme here.
You are?
Yeah, I feel like Barra is like grossly underplayed.
I would agree with that. I think it is primed for
absolutely
a major
any
combat.
I've been playing more Barra Fealty and experimenting with Barra Summer online, and if you can set up the lock, it is unbelievably gross.
Well, do we want to move on to a new deck? Is you're up next to pick, Luke? Is that the one you would pick?
No, I don't think so, because and this is primarily based on the fact that I play in North America, and I've seen some Baratheon in Europe have a huge resurgence. But I think that the matchup that you have to be prepared for, really on both continents right now, is Night's Watch defense. Like I think that Night's Watch defense with the last two chapter packs has a tremendous ambush and card draw engine option in Eri. Kraven is among the most annoying and devastating attachments of the game. Consistent power gain with the wall and the ability to control a small or a big board just with good icons and low gold plot decks with the ability to generate it via Old Forest Hunter or stealing it from your opponent. I mean, the Night's Watch defense deck is a meta-defining deck right now. You have to build with it in mind.
Yeah, I've actually been playing some Night's Watch defense the last couple weeks at our game nights. I will be jumping ahead here a little bit, I guess, but throw out the odd little caveat that if Baratheon dominance theme becomes a thing, you can wind up with some really weird games. Played a couple matches this last weekend against a kid who was playing Barra dominance, and neither of us could really push anything that particularly mattered against each other. So it's just sitting there with a lot of us doing nothing and then claiming power. It was very bizarre.
I think that's funny because I think that Night's Watch is actually one of the factions that's the most vulnerable to Neil, too.
Yeah, just take out a key icon, the one intrigue or whatever, so that someone can slip through an unopposed challenge. And suddenly, you know, a lot of investment you've made in that game plan is pretty tough. And due to the overall smaller size of Night's Watch characters, or at least the playable ones, you can have a hard time pushing back in challenges if you need to try and go that direction. I hate to sound more like I'm knocking the deck and just moving straight into kind of vulnerabilities and matchups rather than strengths, though.
Well, let's let Roy like expound on its virtues then.
Yeah, I think it definitely is a really good counter for Stark. Definitely, because again, I mean, I found this even in the regional season that a wall like wall decks, if we're talking about like Tomas's deck that he won Valberg Margolis with and did really well last weekend at Valberg, or not Valberg, at
Nordics,
the Nordic Championships, Valberg. Anyway, but in two Swedish tournaments, like these,
Nordics were in Stockholm,
right? it's a really good deck. Like, it can just get ahead of, and it owns Martell. It just gets ahead of any deck that is vulnerable to power that can be claimed out of the challenges, out of challenges. You know, like, it can outrace Renown. It can now, it has a lot of answers to things. It's not vulnerable to a lot of traditional sort of spot removal besides Neil, which I think we'll talk about a little bit more when we talk about weaknesses. I think maybe the Baron matchup is a little closer to what Will was saying, like sort of like a wash kind of matchup versus like a strong negative one. But I feel like things like Milk the Poppy, a lot of their characters can't take milks. It has a lot of efficiency. Yeah. It's capable of, like, Nightmares is the best silver bullet. It can definitely beat Lannister, except it's very vulnerable to Lannister swing turns, like a treachery on your Aemon, or if you don't see Aemon, like a tears on an army can just like just create a swing turn that really makes you cry a little bit. But it's a really just really it's an incredibly solid deck. Night's Watch has gotten the tools it needs to really become a top tier house that you have to talk about, I think, in the same breath that we've been talking about with Lannister and Stark. Because I also think we're talking about Fealty here, but the Night's Watch Wolf deck is really good. Like, really, really good. The Varys decks are fantastic right now, even before we get the Night Gathers.
Which is kind of a nice change of pace from how they were kind of derided not that long ago in the game. But, I mean, you kind of alluded to it there when you mentioned Milk of the Poppy in regards to the Night's Watch characters, but also even stuff like the Martell attachment to attachments to remove icons. The fact that damn near everything that's actually playable in Night's Watch either can't have attachments or can pick and choose what icon it grabs is, I think, you know, pretty huge boon to them.
Okay, so I think that Varys is actually a really good card to discuss against Night's Watch because it's a double-edged sword, right? Obviously, the Night Gathers, when it comes out next week, will be a huge deal. But the only other sort of dumpster diving card they have is Yoren. And if Night's Watch has this huge, wide board, Varys can devastate it because a lot of non-unique characters are just going to just instantly be dumped into the discard pile. And your efficiency base of just a wide spread of icons and a huge character base is gone. And your income generation with the old Forest Hunters, gone. At one of our local tournaments a couple weeks back, I just saw a Martell Rose come back single-handedly from a Varys trigger because the Night's Watch defense player just had this huge board with, like, 12 power, and the Martell Rose player triggered Varys, cleared the board, the Night's Watch player triggered the wall, got to 14, couldn't win dominance, and then the Martell Rose player proceeded to absolutely pound from that point on. It's an interesting counter.
Absolutely. I think definitely for the go wide defense decks, it's even more devastating than Wildfire Assault. Because the decks, the mini curve decks, rely a lot on one of characters, if they're unique, or Chud. Or not Chud, I guess, non-unique characters. So they're really vulnerable to Varys. You can't dupe a ranging party, right? And if you have all three out and you get Varys, you're fucked. So, yes.
We're just also missing an elephant in the room, right?
I mean, Ahri is a good answer, though, to Varys, right?
Oh, no, first no. Yeah.
Right. This is an open question that I think the meta right now really hasn't entirely answered. I think first no has gone down in value. We saw this at Gen Con, right?
Agreed for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, that first snow is definitely... I don't think either Chris or Seth were running first snow, if I remember correctly, at Gen Con. And it seems like the decks that are doing well in Europe as well haven't really been running first snow.
Besides Landy Kings of Winter.
Besides Landy Kings of Winter. Besides Jacob's deck. And because that's a straight-up Jumper's deck, and it's a Winter deck. So that, like, as soon as someone flips Kings of Winter, unless maybe they're running Night's Watch, you're immediately going to be like, oh, this might be running First Snow. So the fact that First Snow is at least somewhat out of the meta, and who knows when Valor comes, whether that will push First Snow even further out. I think that does help the mini curve decks a lot right now. They're a little less vulnerable than they were like right afterwards. Plus good efficient four drops.
I will say also that, you know, even though the wall can sometimes outrace Renown, I think that the sheer density of Renown in a Tyrell Summer or a Tyrell Banner good stuff deck, if it gets the right setup with that econ advantage to where they don't care if you take a gold or two, can outpace a Night's Watch defense deck.
But is that really like a concern in like
the No, it's not a concern. I don't think so. Yeah. Not until Renly drops.
Yeah, and Rains will also, I think.
Right, yeah, and Rains.
Yeah.
It's Rains, a little ahead Rains. Of where we are right now. I mean,
yeah, the but problem, it's something to think about though.
Yeah, the problem that this episode has right now is I don't think the next chapter pack, I mean, Renly's really good to make Tyrell go up, but I think the Lanny box with the introduction of Rains is going to make a lot of the things we're saying right now slightly obsolete, right? We're sort of on the verge of a big meta breakthrough. But we
may not have it for Worlds.
Yeah, but I should go get another beer.
Yeah, wow.
So it's not entirely irrelevant.
Oh, definitely not. I think.
I think if you're testing for the world's meta, we're in it right now. So I think that what we're saying is actually pretty relevant.
No, I absolutely agree. But
I think we're pretty close.
I think if the landing, that's the ultimate question. This is sort of a little bit more, it's more the meta of the meta we're talking about. Like if the landing box drops in time, it's going to be a fundamental change for worlds. Reigns just changes the meta game completely. Even if Valor's not present.
I agree.
But if it's not, if for some reason FFG's problems with their distributors or whatever is causing the slowdown, if it's not, this is the meta. And I mean, it's kind of impressive how much the meta has actually shifted since Gen Con, and I really do want to give credit to the Road to Stalic events and the sort of spat of European nationals that have sort of shown, while the meta may be solved, there are some silver bullet answers that can go pretty far in Swiss and maybe take a tournament. So, yeah.
Okay, so I think we're going to go ahead and kick it on to the next discussion here of decks. And this is one that, you know, we had a little back and forth on whether it was going to be included. Luke, I think, is a big advocate for this, despite maybe my personal feelings that it's kind of okay and I'm more interested in Baratheon. But, oh, well, minor spoiler there, folks. This one's not Bera, which we keep mentioning in passing as we go. So what is it, Luke? What are you pushing?
Okay, so I think that there's like some terminology issues. Like, to me, a meta-defining deck doesn't necessarily mean like the best deck. It means that it's something that you're going to encounter with relative frequency and you're going to see in the cut. It's something that like you either have to tech against or know how to play against. And for me, I think that Martell is absolutely a meta-defining deck. Over here in the States and in North America at large, I think that Martell Lion is probably the most popular brand of Martell that you'll see, but I think that you'll see some Martell Wolf on occasion, given the success of Gen Con and, of course, across the pond, the regional placement that Dave had. But Martell is actually extremely versatile. It was one of those factions that, out of the core set, needed some serious love, and over the course of the first cycle, really got it. There's some serious, like, distinctive themes that you can push, whether it's the sneaky rush build, which isn't exactly tier one, but it's fun. There's the icon removal, and then, like, the board clearing abilities with, you know, reversing the claim, marching, you know, first snowing. I mean, it's jumping in stuff with Arianne for that econ acceleration that you so desperately need in Martell. And now Venomous Blade is going to push a different type of deck, I think. I just think that Martell is something you have to be prepared for.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, I think listing it as something to be prepared for harkens back to a little bit to what I was questioning earlier with whether you really had to be prepared for the Tyrell income decks. But yeah,
you're gonna see a Martell banner that is gonna absolutely control the board way more often than you're gonna see a Tyrell leverage income bait out a reset deck.
Right, yeah. Right. Then that's what I was about to say, is that I think this is more likely. What were you about to say, Roy?
I mean, I definitely agree there. I think in the context of the North American meta, right, I think Martell Lion is a common Swiss deck, right? It's a deck that can really run away with games. It can control the board really well.
It can control your hand.
It can control your hand. It's relatively straightforward to play. I think on corner cases, it's very difficult to play, but I think it's because it's a deck that can, on the first or second turn, like, lock a board down. You're just, like, you're setting the tempo of the game until you get to your 15th power. It makes it easy to play. I think, though, Martell, I think, has somewhat gone down in power level as, like, a meta-defining deck, I think, compared to what it was in the pre-Gen Con meta. I mean, I'm sure Alex can give a little more scientific version of this, but I feel like in more recent prestige-level tournaments, Martell has gone down in its ability to make the cut. And I think that is simply because the answers, like, to answer the other top decks that we've talked about so far, Stark and Lannister and Night's Watch, the answers to those factions are also answers to Martell. So you don't necessarily need to tech your deck at this point to specifically beat Martell, which sort of screws Martell over in a way that, in which I feel like before Gen Con, before the current bet of cards, before some of the things, like in the middle of the North American regional seasons, like Martell was a faction that you sort of like tech your deck to beat, or you tech to beat everybody else. So I think it's gone down. Now, that's, I think, just sort of standard Martell. I think more unusual Martell builds, quote-unquote, you might say, like Seth's second-place deck, Martell, a different version of Martell Wolf than Dave's, or like what Kevin Chia was playing that made the cut, the Martell Fealty, like unusual Martell builds that are sort of meant as silver bullets that can get, if you can get a good read on the meta, I think Martell has some of those silver bullets, but as a default net deck, I think Martell is at one of its weakest places since Nymeria dropped.
You know, I like the Lannister banner, or Lion banner, I should say, as you mentioned. But I think something that we keep kind of hinting around, as I said, with Baratheon, I think the Martell Stag banner might see a shot again here, and maybe some kind of variation on the kind of hand just destruction stuff that was kind of a blip for a while in the spring. And just that super control that brings to the table, that there's a lot of other options available from other houses, but at the sheer amount of kind of first ed feel to that control, I think that's where it's at. And you know, again, this is another time when we're just looking forward a little bit to stuff that's gonna come along and, you know, make some of this discussion moot. Haven't had that many beers. And I think the addition of Valor may really make that type of thing there. Do I feel it's quite there yet? Maybe not.
All I'm saying is that from June until now, Martell is neck and neck with Stark for the second most cuts made at 15%, Stark at 16%, according to the annals. So
what about wind? Wind? Yeah, I mean the cut is probably a better overall factor, but
interestingly,
listeners going to ask about wind.
Interestingly enough, wins by faction is Lannister at 24%, Greyjoy at 15%, Stark at 15%, and Martell just below that at 13%. So I think that Martell is still something you have to be prepared for.
That's a tight spread.
Yeah, I mean, Greyjoy is an interesting place in this discussion just because it's so boom or bust. And, you know, if you have a good run with Greyjoy and you're a good player, then you can totally pilot that thing to a win. But Martell is, in my opinion, still a really, really strong option. Like, it's not going away anytime soon. And it's getting some serious love in the next in the upcoming chapter pack, right?
Absolutely. Shield Maiden, right, is a good card.
It's a card that I don't particularly like, but other people do, and I'm sure that people who actually play Martell will make it work.
Right, and we discussed this. It's one of those deck cards that's sort of going to be probably broken by someone, right? Like, there's going to be a deck out there that just abuses it to death. I think that's what we came to, the four of us, when we reviewed the card.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely sounded like I'm much more negative on Martell than really at the end of the day I am. But I think in many ways, Martell and Greyjoy are...
One of the things that makes Martell incredibly powerful is that there's not enough good, reliable attachment removal in the game. And the fact that you can just like, throw those things down at one gold is just bonkers. Like, Martell's mid-range curve is among the best in the game. Like, the 3-5 cost slot in Martell is gross. Like, it is so efficient, it is so good, and generally speaking, if you're running plots that are 4-5 gold, you're going to have that extra gold to be able to drop a milk or be able to drop, one of the icon removers. And if you've got a Nymeria on board or an Ariane on board that can surprise in another 5-cost character like a Nymeria for extra icon control, it's really, really hard to deal with, especially if they're able to first stow away all of the other stuff because their cost curve is built for that, and then march something really, really important.
Okay, so weaknesses. So why are some of us a little less bullish on this? I think the number one is that Martell has a similar problem to Lannister, which is power icons. This is the thing I actually saw at Gen Con where I played Landy Sun, which obviously is Landy main house, but actually the Martell faction aspects of the card sort of didn't help with that problem. I think also the problem is one of its strengths can also be a weakness. Like, you can sometimes mulligan like a 3-card setup into a 1-card setup that's full of Milk of the Poppies and attachments. That's a big problem. I feel like really heavy Martell control builds can sometimes have a problem, like the Martell Stag build that Will mentioned earlier, which I think is an amazingly strong deck.
Can it
win though in an hour and 55 minutes? Like, that's like that's the problem that some Martell control decks have, right? Is can you get to 15 power by the time? Or are you going to have to rely on the good graces of your opponent to scoop to you if, you know, you're at 13 power and they're at 8 and you go to time? Or can you make the cut, you know, on having one or two mod wins? Like, I think...
Sam did at King of the North.
Yeah, look, that's Sam.
I know. That's not fair.
But, I mean, I think that's a real consideration, particularly for us mere mortals, right?
I think one of the other weaknesses of Martell is the sheer cost-to-strength ratios. While they do have some really good cards at the 3, 4, and 5 cost slots, and even the 6 cost, they're really not good at pushing through challenges if you can't control the icons. And also, as we saw in some of the other tournaments over in Europe... Targ Burn against Martell is just gross because there's just so many 4-cost characters and you can just like burn through all the dupes and not even care about Vengeance for Ilia.
Or even more expensive characters like Tyene.
Yeah, Tyene or, you know, yeah, Doran even.
Five.
Yeah, Nymeria, yep. Ariane.
Yeah, Ariane. And I think
all their key characters died at Dracarys and
Stark
and Crown, basically.
Stark is disgusting against Martell because the denial just prevents all of those shenanigans, right? No tie-in triggers on a key challenge where you know that you really need to push it through or to make them kneel out. There's absolutely no way that they can trigger a vengeance for Ilya. Like, there's so many things that you could shut down with just kneeling a cat or kneeling a Winterfell.
But I think of all of the factions right now, the faction that most cries with Milk of the Poppy is Martell. Like, so many of their characters become pure shit.
If agreed. The Poppy.
Like,
agreed.
Nymeria. Oh, yeah.
Like, not even challenge blockers.
Yeah.
In
or
case
or
of something
if
like
Nymeria or Arianne.
Arianne milked is so sad.
And then, like, yeah, Tyeen is what? She's 3 base strength? Like, okay, yeah. What are you going to do with that? That's a big problem. And this is what I sort of gets back to sort of one of the things that I've noticed, at least, is that because so many other factions, Milk of the Poppy is very helpful for, and Nightmares is very helpful for, that makes Martell matchups better for your deck. The fact that Milk of the Poppy helps with Lannister and against Stark. Like, in a Hand's Judgment meta, I feel like Martell is worse. Or better, rather. Excuse me, is better. Because it's harder to hit Vengeance Valley. You have to have 2 gold, not 1 gold. But I feel like in a Nightmares meta we're in right now, Martell is worse off because Nightmares makes Nymeria suck. And
or just lose the challenge and snipe it.
Yeah.
Like, Martell does have the answers. The problem is that their characters, while efficient and very, very impactful, do get controlled easily by those effects that are so prevalent in the meta right now. I still think that if Martell gets the jump on the board, it's very hard to come back from that.
Well, all right. Does that pause then send us on to a brief mention of our dark horse, the house that we keep talking about that in some ways was originally not going to be mentioned in this list? Does that send us on to Baratheon Neil control of some variety?
Sure. And I just want to apologize in advance. If you hear like random squeaking, it's because I have a 3-month-old puppy and he's playing with a dog, like a dog toy in the background. So there you go.
There you go. So Baratheon, we keep kind of dancing in and out of it here. And basically, I feel like Baratheon fealty here will kind of start with as a baseline here. Is kind of a baseline deck, much like Lannister Neil was in first edition. Like, its power level, honestly, stays fairly constant, but other things in the meta kind of shift back and forth around it, it feels like to me. It may not get appreciably worse in the same way that some other things do. I don't know if other people kind of view that type of thing the same way to me as me, but I feel like that spot Neil control always kind of has a home against and anything really that's investing a good chunk into some key characters and cards. And second edition pushes that way as Baratheon looks like it gets a couple more tools coming up here. I think it ought to swing back up.
I think it's funny that you mention it in terms of card cost, because like second edition is so dependent on economy, and the idea of being able to neutralize potentially, if you meter your cards right, turn after turn after turn between 4 and 7 gold worth of character is just so powerful.
Oh, agreed.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. Like, because a lot, particularly, again, I want to specifically talk about the North American meta. Like, a lot of North American decks are really greedy. Lannister, good stuff, and Stark Fealty being the most obvious ones, and to a lesser extent, Martell in some ways, you know, where they rely on the 6-7 and to a lesser extent 5-cost characters to pull games, particularly Stark and Lannister rely on their 7 and 6-costers to just sort of close games, establish dominance, push through the key removal, push through the power, like the superpower gain. And Bera punishes invest, like punishes your strategy being built around Tywin, punishes your strategy being built around Fast Eddie. And that is a really, really strong meta answer in us, particularly, you know, moving away from sort of the Stannis lockdown, but just a spot Neil with things like the King's Judge. Is King's Judgment is the Stark event, the 2-cost event? My brain is.
Wait, you mean the Bera event? You mean even Hand of Justice?
Even Stark boxes, Hand of Justice, right? King's Justice, yeah even Hand of Justice. Right.
This God, that card is just gross. That card is so good.
Gross card.
It's so good. In both formats.
Exactly.
You know, we haven't mentioned melee much here. This is mainly a joust directed episode, but wow.
Yeah, I mean, melee, the card just is broken. I think.
I don't think it's broken, but it's
not broken. Fucking ridiculous.
But it's a big reason to play Bera.
Like, I don't know, like, Keb was running a Bera deck at, I think it was Bera Lion? Yeah, it was Bera Lion, because she definitely in Tyrion.
No, it was Bera Kraken.
Was it Bera? No, at Gen Con when she and James came
out? Oh, no, she ran Bera Kraken in the Joust, that's right.
In the Joust, in the melee.
And, yeah, like, she was Bera Lion in the in
Bera Lion, and that fucking event, man. That event.
Yeah. Ugh. Tyrion surprise, Neil all your shit.
Yeah, it's just, and then, like, Neil your best stuff, and it's brutal. So the fact that it can punish some of the best decks, and the fact that it's not, people don't expect it, like, which is a weird thing because it was so prevalent when the game first started about a year ago, but sort of it sort of fell out of favor, particularly in North America, in the regional season, has sort of made it a really strong cut, like a chance to make the cut kind of deck. Like, you can really just run over people, but it's not a glass cannon. Like, that's the thing. Like, unlike, I think, Greyjoy in particular, and Martell to a lesser extent right now, Bera has the consistency to run over people, but also be able to play from behind if you have a slow start, which I think.
So for those listeners, Roy, who are interested in, like, delving back into Bera, or who never really, like, took it up to begin with, like, why are they good in both positions? Because I kind of agree with you.
Well, it's the Neil, right? I mean, fundamentally, like, Neil, because you're denying your opponent resources on two ends, you're denying them economic resources, I spent X gold to play this character, and then you're denying them the use of that character in challenges. So, oh, I spent 6 gold on Fast Eddie, you kneel him, so not only did I spend gold, but I lost the tempo of not being able to use him in these challenges. And so the fact that you can kneel cards while you're trying to find your pieces is really good from playing behind. And then obviously, if you have a really good start, the ability to deny your opponent, you know, you have Robert, Mel, two or three other good characters, you're just capable of dumping R'hllor cards out of your hand and sort of kneeling their characters prevents them from having any kind of comeback engine. So that's sort of where Bera can stall when it wants to and then can crank up the power gain, you know, Lightbringer on Robert or Lightbringer on Selmy or things like that. So
I think it's also worth noting that Bera actually is the one faction that focuses on the single win condition, right? Like, the fact that you can actually outgain them in power or just slow them down in power gain is huge. Huge for this kind of game. Anyway, I think that we've talked about Bera as a potential answer for a lot of stuff, so maybe we can move on to the rest of the episode here. Yeah, Will?
Yeah, I think so. As I said, we kind of wove in and out of Baratheon for pretty much everything as the discussion went.
So props and slops.
Props and slops. All right. I've got one I want to jump on this week because it's what I was doing right before we actually started recording. And that is I was watching season 2 of Scream Queens. Longtime listeners will know that was my guilty pleasure this time of year last year with season 1. And the beginning to season 2, I think, looks just as amusing. The addition of John Stamos and Kirstie Alley to the cast is pretty awesome. Mainly John Stamos, but Kirstie Alley was amusing as well. So if you're not familiar with it, it is a horror comedy on Fox. Of course, you can watch it on Hulu or wherever if you want. And it's from the same guy that brought everybody Glee. So it's got a kind of a little twist. And of course, he's got a big love of casting Lea Michele and everything. So take that as you will. But I really, really enjoy that show.
All right, I'll run through mine real quick. Plus two... well, I guess not plus props, right? Props to Jeremy Coffey, who plays in the Lexington Meta in Kentucky, and the distillery he works for, Hartfield & Company. They actually have just expanded to a 22,000 square foot facility, so props to that, because their bourbon is excellent, and hopefully it'll be distributed en masse here soon. And then props to my wife for putting up with me podcasting in the middle of the week, even though we both have tons of things to do.
That's important.
Yeah.
I'm gonna prop your wife as well.
Yeah. And slops to the U.S. legislature. Because people shouldn't be able... People shouldn't be able to sue Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
I mean, like, how?
I missed something. So
okay, well,
yeah,
so
I know that.
Okay, so the idea was that there was a bill proposed in the Senate, and it was passed by a huge majority in both the Senate and the House that would allow citizens of the United States to sue the country of Saudi Arabia for any involvement in 9/11, which President Obama vetoed. It went back to the Senate today for a vote, and the veto was overturned 97-1 with 2 abstentions.
In the Senate, so I assume it passed the House by the 2/3 majority.
Well, no, it's going to the House now.
Okay. Well, if it passed the Senate by that much of a majority, it will probably.
Yeah. You can assume that it's going to be an overwhelming majority of the House. So And even though it may not have a whole lot of, like, immediate consequences for a lot of middle America and people who are listening, it's just a really bad look. Anyway, slops to the U.S. legislature.
Well, I have exactly one prop, if that's okay, gentlemen, because this is going to come out on Friday, most likely, or maybe Saturday, depending on what Will's schedule is. And if it comes out on Friday, it's going to be my girlfriend Ala's 30th birthday. And I really, and anyone who sort of, you know, because apparently, as I found out last week, I'm in all of the podcasts. So, you know, if you've watched Second Son's episodes, you've seen Ala in the background. She's always been very supportive of, since we've been together, of me playing Thrones, me podcasting. She's played Thrones. She, you know, and so she's very supportive of the game. And I just want to tell everyone that she's just such an amazing person, and I am incredibly happy that we're together, and I want to wish her a happy birthday and prop her on this, her 30th birthday, and tell her that I love her on the most public stage that I have. So.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Props to Ala as well.
Props to love.
To love, indeed.
Yeah.
We don't really... We don't need to talk about love. That puts us in...
the danger zone,
I guess.
Sort of.
It definitely closes another chapter in the White Book, at least.
It's true. what's your least favorite kind of, like, ice cream? Like, I really just like ice cream. So, yeah, I have some preferences.
Do
better,
you?
But...
Oh, yeah. Do you really?
I do.
Do you?
I do. It's called soy ice cream or almond milk ice cream or sorbet, which I guess is technically not an ice cream.
Coconut milk ice cream?
Coconut milk ice cream. Coconut milk ice cream is very good.
So, well, you know, at least you're allowed to eat ice cream whenever you want. It is definitely Patrick's bedtime, and he is not allowed to eat ice cream right now.
Wow. Okay. So, let's say we get rolling with this episode. We'll intro banter. Okay. We'll talk Patreon for a moment. We'll hit on the store championship announcement. And then we'll move into some of this top deck stuff and see if we can power through it in a reasonable amount of time.
Cool.
Sound good?
All right. I'm muting myself while you do this then.